At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten. Rakuten.com.
Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience of eating disorders, with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself, and reflect on these conversations. It was an absolute pleasure of mine to reconnect this week with Lawrence. Lawrence has type 1 diabetes and has also struggled with anorexia. We talk about the changes that have happened since we first spoke when it was called diabulimia and now how it's referred to as TID, type 1 diabetes with disordered eating. It was so, so lovely to catch up with Lawrence and really reflect on the changes that he's made personally as well as what medically has happened. I really, really hope that you enjoy this episode. Have a giggle along the way with us because it really was like catching up with an old friend.
Oh my gosh. Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I fully, fully can. What a treat.
I don't normally wear these headphones with my little thingamajiggle on, but I realized I went downstairs to get my AirPods and I realized that some stupid idiot, aka me, had left them out of their case and they were dead. So
yeah, listen, happens to the best of us.
How are you? I feel like I've not seen you for so long.
I know, it feels like a whole other world. Like yeah, I'm good.
You're engaged.
Boof. It finally happened. Yeah, that was a bit of a shock. I mean, like, we're coming up to 11 years, so it kind of makes sense.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But, yeah, it was a nice surprise for both of us. It was mainly a surprise for him, and he was one who did it.
Oh, okay.
He's kind of like, oh my God, we're doing this. Ah! We don't have to if you don't want to, but okay.
Oh, amazing. Well, congratulations. Yeah. That's very
exciting.
Thank you very
much. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it's so good to how you doing.
Yeah, all right. Good. Yeah, I feel like so much has happened, but equally things still feel the same. But it's so nice to have you back on because I remember when we did our first one and we just did not stop chatting. And then my mum listened to it and she was like, you two were amazing together. Like, you had such good conversations. Like, she's like, I want him to be my best friend.
That life. Well, and how amazing that also we are speaking on the eve of 1989 Taylor's version coming out as well.
Oh, like, God. Yeah, what a
big deal.
Yep, absolutely. That is very exciting. I feel in a weird mood because I just had therapy.
Okay.
But it was a good session. And it was more of like a chatty one rather than like a deep, intense one like last week. But I feel like, yeah, I've got quite a lot of energy. So
let's use it, babe. Let's do
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. So let's get ourselves started. I want to ask you a question, actually. So I noticed that, well, you've called yourself Lawrence on here, but then your Instagram and your email address are Lom. And I was like, do I refer to you as
Lom? That is literally because I hate the name Lawrence, because I just feel it. Well, I kind of feel it gives away, I don't know. And also Lawrence Smith, because it sounds like Lauren Smith. Nothing wrong with that, but like, it just kind of.
It's not you.
Made, made my childhood tricky, but no, it's just that it's my family nickname. It's what my brother called me when we were kids because he couldn't pronounce Lawrence, which is fair enough. So it's just been like, I think like Smith, you kind of get told like, oh, there's so many Smiths, it's hard to say original. So like, okay, well, I'll keep the Smith bit. But no, I'm fully, you know, that's fully just a wee pet name.
Okay.
But yeah, no, Lawrence is good. Lawrence, Larry, whatever. If it starts with an L, I'll answer to it, okay, basically.
I didn't know whether your name was like Lawrence Ollie Michael Smith or something, and you.
Wow.
You then.
It sounds like I should be on the X Factor.
Lawrence Ollie Mars.
There we go.
Yeah, you've got the blonde hair as well, like Ollie Mars nowadays. So.
Yeah. Does he? I don't know.
Yeah. Fun fact. I don't know
about Ollie Mars.
About Ollie Mars and me. Yeah. No. Sadly, nothing fun. I slept on the street to meet Ollie Mars. I was a big fan. Yeah.
Okay.
Swiftly moving on.
Good.
That's always my fun fact, you know, when you have to do like a
icebreaker thing
at work. I always say I slept on the street to meet Ollie Mars, and I don't know whether that's maybe the right tone or not.
Yeah, it's bold. It is very bold.
People never guess it's me though, so it's I think that shows I've developed as a person.
No, sure.
Okay. So what we're here today, we are here together because in November, which is in a few days, is Diabetes Awareness Month. And you did a really cool presentation at a conference the other day, which I saw, and I thought, why not get together? Maybe a couple of years on, actually, and talk about...
Time is meaningless.
Talk about diabetes and eating disorders and all of that sort of thing. So, do you want to start by... Actually, I don't know how to start this because I want to say the word, but you've told me that that's not now how we, what we refer to it as. So maybe we could talk about that first, of like the term that we used to use and not what we use now and what that is.
Totally. Cool. Yeah, so I think, well, first of all, when I was diagnosed with blank... I don't really think there was a word. I think it's kind of like, oh, that's abnormal. And we can go into that in the fact that I didn't fit the main categorization of an eating disorder. Therefore, I felt like I didn't have one, or I felt like I was cheating at having an eating disorder because I didn't fit into the labels. But so it was previously known, and maybe in some communities and some areas, it's still known as diabulimia. I personally feel that that kind of makes it sound like a word pun. Not say obviously it's not funny, but I think in some ways it makes it kind of catchy, which is maybe good, you know, it kind of sticks in the brain. But in the same way that when I was diagnosed with anorexia, there's a lot of terms of like manorexia going around, and I was I felt like it just kind of devalued my experience. So calling it diabulimia as well, I knew that at the time I wasn't binging and purging, which are the cornerstones of bulimia nervosa. So then I was kind of like, well, no, it's not that. It's its own thing. And I think kind of trying to make it sound like, I don't know, a line in a limerick kind of made it, it just devalued my experience. So then, and it's, you know, it sounds a wee bit jokey, and obviously it's very serious. So then in the past couple of years, then it started to pop up TIDE, so T1DE, the stand for type 1 diabetes with disordered eating. And I think in some ways, obviously, yes, that's also a catchy slogan title, TIDE, you know, but I think it just, yeah, it makes it stand on its own merit as opposed to sounding like it's kind of like a diminutive version of another more established eating disorder, you know. And I think, yeah, like as I say, upon diagnosis, because I wasn't going into full, I can never, how much detail do you want me to go into? Like, I don't want to do anything triggering. I don't want to.
My perspective of this is we're here to listen to your story, and we will put in the show notes what we discuss. And if as long as you don't say like particular numbers I think people will recognize that behaviors will be discussed on this podcast. And this might be a harsh thing to say, but for me and my recovery, when I have listened to something and I found it triggering, that's been a really important moment for me to reflect on why that's triggering. Because when you go out into society, things will trigger you and you need to pause and you need to reflect on that. So I think avoid numbers, but in general terms, like pretty open to discuss what's going on or what went on for you.
I mean, we can keep that bit in because discussing numbers, let's not talk about numbers, in diabetes, your life is governed by numbers.
Yeah.
And so the, you know, the inherent irony is right there. And, you know, within, within the eating disorder community, let's get away from perfection. Let's get away from idealized versions of things. Let's get away from numbers. Let's get away from paying too much attention on certain aspects of it. Whereas, and, you know, let's not read the food labels. But when you, in the diabetic side of things, you do need to read the food labels because you need to know how much, how many units you're injecting. So it's kind of hard to hold up a packet of crisps and put your finger over the calories, but make sure you can read the carbs. You know, so it's inherently there is just kind of a confusion there, and so kind of trying to adapt a model that honors both the diabetes and the eating disorder and doesn't kind of neglect one for the other. It's quite a quagmire of things. I'm not jealous of people who are trying to get to the bottom of it, because it's in some ways it's so self-evident. You have this massive preoccupation with food from the get-go. I mean, my experience is I was diagnosed with type 1 when I was 3, so for me I've just always had it. But that means from 3 years old at least I viewed food as medicine, or I had a distorted relationship to food, and that's too much, that's not enough. And that's within the confines of childhood and when you're being parented and looked after. But then once you hit adolescence and you're given the keys to your own car, I kind of crashed it. Just because I think I just didn't really know. The relationship just went from being, you know, just kind of a responsibility to look after my levels and food intake. So then it just became this real burden. And I try and like not make it too glum and stuff, because as I said, my brother's type 1 diabetic and he hasn't gone through the food issues I've had. So it's not to say, oh, you're gonna have type 1 diabetes from an early age, therefore this is gonna happen. Of course not, in the same way that other eating disorders, you know, there's no particular rhyme or reason why people. But I think it's good to have the awareness that someone with diabetes might have a different relationship to food than those around them.
I think, you know, from what you said there, it like you said, it doesn't make sense, but it does make sense, because you're having to be fixated about what's going into your body and the impact that that's having and the components that that's made up of. But it's interesting that your brother is also type 1 diabetic and hasn't had those difficulties with food. And I was just interested when you were saying there about you saw food as medicine. And like, it's obviously there's no clear up picture as to why these things develop, but was it for you, and it could be both, do you think that kind of the obsession you had to have around food was what led to the eating disorder, or was it like, okay, food is medicine and like I don't want to kind of keep myself healthy, therefore food is the way that I can also like make myself poorly?
Totally. I think maybe less an obsession, but more of a heightened focus. There was no easy, lazy meal. You know, you don't just have something and then that's it, gone. You're kind of always, you're looking in your rear view mirror the whole time. What did I just eat and what am I going to eat next? So, and for some people that might just be just par for the course, but I think if someone is predisposed to having an unhealthy relationship with their bodies or with pressures like that, that can easily set things off onto a quite a dangerous spiral. So less of an obsession of, yeah, I think just more, you're just so keenly aware of food. So it takes on an inflated presence in your life. So I think if you then get to this crossroads where you have a negative relationship with food, I think it's quite easy to tip over into another side of things. But yeah, and I think in terms of the food being the medicine as well, like I think you identify, like I've tried very hard over the past couple of years to not use the words like I'm diabetic or I'm anorexic or XYZ, because I think the power of that terminology suggests that doesn't leave room for anything else. So if I say I am diabetic and therefore that's all I am, now of course that doesn't have to be the case, but it, at a certain time, if you're not feeling too great about yourself, you might believe that rationale. So I've tried to move away from I am diabetic and move more to I have diabetes and I have issues with food and I have depression, not I am depressed. Yes, I am obviously in a constant state of being diabetic. That's not going away anytime soon. But I think it's so important to take away the power from it. Because I think what was happening at a time when I was feeling really bad about myself is I then wanted to punish the diabetes. And kind of, I resent.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
I hated it so much and I hated it. But then my diabetes is a part of myself. So therefore the hatred then gets turned on me. And so I think it's, yeah, I think I'm just, I'm trying to distance and have a healthier relationship with things and just try to move away from like a totalitarian view of this is who I am. Because in the same way with an eating disorder, I didn't like to think of myself as being one thing, because then it suggested I was never going to recover.
Mm-hmm.
And it becoming your whole identity, you know. So yeah, it's a tricky thing, but I think I very much used and abused the diabetes, and because I was self-harming and depressed, here was quite a powerful tool, and I had it at my disposal, right at my fingertips.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like it made total sense to me to use it in a way that was really negative towards myself. It's all mixed up in there, isn't it?
I really like what you were saying about the sort of label thing, because I think, and this may come across as controversial, but I think as soon as we give ourselves the labels like I am anorexic or I am diabetic, like it's no, you're like, yes, you are, but that's not the only part of you. And I think as soon as it becomes a label, it then kind of prevents you almost from being all the other things that you are. And yeah, I think that can be really damaging, and you see it a lot with other conditions as well that people aren't going to recover from. You know, with mental health conditions, I think people's argument is, you know, you're hopefully going to recover from your anorexia, so don't wrap yourself up in it as an identity. But even something like diabetes that is going to be with you for your life, I think just to kind of minimize yourself to one diagnostic, or even if it's a couple of diagnoses that you have, like you're so much more than those medical conditions. And I think you can really get yourself trapped in just like labeling yourself in that way, rather than, you know, being the friend or the son or the, you know, fiance or whatever you are. There's so much more. And I think for me, that's what recovery so far has been, is actually unpicking all those bits about me that I was hiding before, because it was just I'm anorexic and everything else falls below that, because that was like the priority for me, was to fulfill that.
Yeah, I think I also, like, at a time when you know, I'm anorexic or I'm diabetic or I'm, I mean, let's say TIDE and diabulimia, I wasn't aware of the term at the time, but therefore I kind of created this other, this almost alter ego.
Mm.
And anything that was bad in my life, I was attributing to the diabetes and to the anorexia. When I was doing the things, you know, it was me as well, you know, but I kind of, it just became this kind of magnet for the wrong things happening in life. And, you know, if I was failing at my exams, or if I was being not a good friend or not a good grandson, yeah, I could be like, well, I'm actually not very well at the moment, so that's why.
Yeah.
So that's actually, it's actually not my fault. And, you know, it became so easy to kind of use it as a scapegoat. But then at points, then the alter ego of the illness sometimes would eclipse me, the individual. Mm. And it was, I think, I guess, a case of trying to take the power back from it, because as is well documented, it is so alluring, the power of an eating disorder, and it's so powerful. So the idea of moving away from it was terrifying. Like I didn't, I'm saying I didn't want to. I was so desperate for a diagnosis. And I think so when we're talking about labels, it's I think it's important maybe just to validate, they can be useful to validate the experience that that the individual is going through, because I was out there being like, I don't know what the hell is wrong with me. And because I was, you know, Googling like signs of anorexia, and I was like, I think I meet some of these, but I don't meet all the criteria. So therefore, do I have an eating disorder? Maybe I'm fine. Maybe it's me. Maybe I'm wrong. And you hear of, you know, treatment for certain eating disorders. I was like, well, I don't think I fit in those boxes. So therefore, maybe I'm not going to get better. You know, so the idea, that's kind of why it's just been the past couple of years, really, since like I spoke to you last, and since just kind of, I don't know, doing stuff on social media, whatever, even if it's just a wee thing, like I think I've spent so long hiding the diabetes and hiding the eating disorder and hiding mental health stuff. Just to have like one sliver of recognition, I'm like, oh my god, that's huge. Like back then, I can just think of young Lawrence, and he was so alone, not just in like his social circle and stuff, but it felt like in society, because I was like, I'm not even in a textbook. The thing that is ruining my life right now isn't recognized by the medical community. Mm. The fact that I spoke at this conference a few days back, like the fact that there is a national convention on the thing that made me like catatonic on the floor as a teenager, I'm like, this is so huge. And it's kind of, in some ways, I'm, the fact I'm even talking to you right now, it kind of gets me a wee bit emotional. Like I'm so happy for myself that this door is open. Because it just felt for so many years I was completely alone. And so I think to know that there are people out there who recognize this and who can empathize and can build. And I love the fact that there are people who might disagree with me, because they're like, actually, no, my experience of this illness is different. I'm like, cool. That's so cool that there's more than me. And that it gets recognized as not a niche topic, because, you know, rates of diabetes are... they're high, and it's a again, I can only speak from the type 1 side of things, but I think, and I mean I personally don't, you know, I am male, but that's not like, I think that's maybe like the ninth most important thing about me, or the thing that I care about. But I think maybe the fact that I am a guy and I'm talking about eating disorders, there's still, I feel, stigmatization about that in the media. And you know, you only get to front a documentary about this on BBC Three if you happen to also have been on Strictly or something. You know, like, I think it devalues folks like you and me, like normal people. So I understand why broadcasters have to do what they do to get eyes on the thing, and focus on the illnesses and stuff and raise awareness. I think there's so much power in what the individual can do. And yeah, I think just be honest with their own experience and value it, because you know, the people around you see it in you and they value it. They want you to get, you know, they think I might have gone off on a tangent. I'm not quite sure. I think the moment I started talking about Strictly, I was like, oh, damn, I'm really looking forward to Strictly this week. I love it. I love it so much. And I don't care. And I don't care. Who knows? I love Strictly.
Well, my mum will be sat right next to you because she bloody loves it as well.
Good.
But I think I'm just so happy that, you know, you feel as though there's other people that have not happy that other people are experiencing the same thing as you.
Sure.
You know, I'm not going to wish that on anybody.
Yeah.
But I think when you're in that moment, you do feel so isolated in your experience. Mm-hmm. And it can be really tough when it's like that, because, you know, you're given this diagnosis and it's like, that doesn't fit for me. That doesn't align with what I feel or the things that are going on. And I guess you then had a double whammy of like, you know, I'm so confused as to what this eating disorder, is it even an eating disorder thing is, mm-hmm. because I've been given this anorexia diagnosis, it doesn't work. Then along comes this label of diabulimia, but it's like, I mean, I remember when I was doing my master's and I sort of heard of the term diabulimia, but not massively. And I remember my lecturer saying it and I was just like, okay, so that's when people with diabetes binge and purge. And he was like, no, like they, you know, they don't use their insulin or there's so many different things that kind of align with it. And I was just like, well, that doesn't make any sense. But then I guess my question for you, and you may not know, but like you mentioned, like talking to other people with different experiences, like is diabulimia tied as we're, as it's being referred to now? Is it as simple as just saying, you know, it's because I think that for me, the general rhetoric of what it is it's people that have diabetes and therefore they don't use their medication in order to regulate their glucose levels and things, which I guess if you think about it, is sort of bulimia, because bulimia, you know, the purging behavior can be misuse of medication. But is it as simple as that, or is it, you know, could it just be that somebody has diabetes but they're also restricting their food intake, or they have diabetes but they're binging? Like, is it does it cross over to all the eating disorders and it's just like eating disorder with diabetes, or is it specific behaviors with diabetes?
I think it's such a good question, because it's kind of, can you be, and this is a bad analogy, I was like, can you be the chicken without being the egg? I don't know, but like that's not correct. I feel if you're in like a diabetic free fall or something like that, if you have an adversarial relationship with your diabetes, all tick 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 to everything you just said in a way, like it's hard for other behaviors to not be impacted. I think the diagnosis would come from, well, what is driving this? Is it diabetes mismanagement, or is it when does it go from being diabetes mismanagement to going into an eating disorder? And that you can maybe apply that from other eating disorder practices as well, like when does it go from being something that is like just like disorder into like this is a full-blown diagnosable issue. I think what was so powerful for me a couple of years back, actually, because as I say, diagnosed in the early 90s, as a kid, I didn't really have that much understanding or like face-to-face time on my own with the doctors, but as an adult, to go in for my checkups, and one of the doctors asked me, how you doing? And I was like, oh yeah, sorry if I've said this story before, but like, I was like, oh yeah, totally fine. But like my train was late, that whatever. And he's like, no, I just meant like, how are you feeling? I was like, oh my God, someone in my diabetes clinic is asking me about my emotions. Cause it's so easy to go into the clinic and personally feel like a bad diabetic, quote unquote, because I'm feeling judged, and they're going to look through my levels. They're going to look like, why'd you do that? What's going on here? That doesn't look good. You need to look out for this and blah, 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 blah. And I think for someone to just kind of sit me down and be like we recognize that this has they're coining it a diabetes burnout. Like, we understand that living with a chronic condition for such a long time can lead to just fatigue and people kind of really struggling, and you know, there's massive correlations, as we say, between diabetes and eating disorders. And I think in terms of like disagreeing with folks, I think sometimes it's the yeah, it's the rationale behind it, because I think some folks they say they're in adolescence and they get diagnosed, one of the big warning signs of diabetes is can be weight loss, and I think then they have the weight loss, then they get diagnosed with the diabetes, and then once they start to inject and balance out their levels, they start to naturally put weight back on. So then they view, oh, the diabetes is directly associated with weight, and therefore, and some people then develop a relationship with their insulin in a way that they view the insulin as bad. And, you know, if I'm injecting insulin, it's like I'm injecting weight on myself. Yeah. I'm very lucky in that that was not my experience. And I think that is because of an early diagnosis when I was three. You know, I didn't, that wasn't a concern of mine at 3 years old, you know. But I think I definitely, whether or not I knew it, was suffering from the burnout side of things, because by the time I'm 15, I've been diabetic for the majority of my life. Yeah. And people who are diagnosed later, they can maybe compare contrast their experiences from when they didn't have diabetes, whereas I can't remember a life without it. So then I would then get jealous of those around me, and so it's kind of, there's a lot of, like, I don't know, there's negativity swirling around it, and I mean, I was struggling as well with like fears of having a hypo when your sugars are running too low. So I was exercising and then having a hypo, so therefore would then need to have sugar after exercising, which to me just didn't make any sense. I'm like, well, then I'm just, that was all for naught, you know. And then I would abuse my levels, so that when I did exercise, I didn't drop down as drastically low. And then not really.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, Baconate with a breakfast Baconator. Roll with the sausage breakfast burrito. Buddy it up with a honey buddy. Or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes. And then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
The ramifications that can have. Complete side note, I went to see the new Martin Scorsese film the other day. And if we're talking about triggers, there's a whole plot in it about diabetes, and I was like, oh god, I was not expecting that. And you just see these people really poorly on screen, and so it's kind of, and it's 3.5 hours long, which is long enough without being triggered, like, and you weren't expecting when it, because it wasn't a massive plot point, but it was very present. I don't know, in some ways I was like, well, this is quite allegorical in a way of like, life is long, and when you least expect it, you're going to get smacked in the face by someone taking insulin. And what's so interesting is, like, some days your diabetes, much the same as your eating disorder, can just be there, existing in the background, not really doing much. And then some days it is all you can focus on. Mm-hmm. And I think when you feel, God, life's hard enough without this added baggage, which I did nothing to deserve, you know, and then it becomes this big holistic pile of shit because of your genes and what you're going through. It's a lot to contend with. I have no idea if I answered your question.
I can't even remember what my question was.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, well.
But, I mean, I don't care.
Yeah, fair, cool, okay.
Because my next question, from what you've just said, and this is a bit of a structured question, but I want to understand it anyway,
mm-hmm.
Is, you know, you said about you started, like, abusing your insulin, you know, playing with it so that it didn't drop so low when you were exercising and stuff. And from what we've spoken about so far, it sounds like not having your insulin kind of, you know, causes weight loss.
Mm-hmm.
What else happens when you don't have your insulin? Because, you know, I'm pretty sure it's more than they're just trying to maintain your weight.
Oh, for sure. You feel like your eyeballs are on fire. Like extreme lethargy. Frequent urination, which is part of the weight loss because the fatty acids break down and then your body tries to get rid of it as quickly as it can. I again have been so fortunate in that I personally have not got to the stage where that there's hospitalization as a result because people go into diabetic ketoacidosis, which is basically your blood turns into acid. It has, and this is a tricky thing as well, like actions I undertook as a 15-year-old or something might come to bite me on the ass in my 50s. So organ damage with like eyes and kidneys and feet, same thing with like with blood vessel issues. It's hard also to distance it from also I was also tired because I wasn't eating. Like I also, had anorexia, so it's kind of it's hard to parse that out. But yeah, I remember, I just like failed all my exams and I wasn't one of those high achieving people with an eating disorder. Actually, that's quite worth saying because anytime I read a book, it always says typical people with eating disorders are very high achieving, and I was like, I'm not even that. Oh my God, I'm really screwing this up. But I remember like there's one teacher who's just like, I didn't call on you the entire year because you looked unconscious. I was like, cool, thanks for
Wow.
the heads up. But
Thanks for
just
doing something about that.
Totally cool, totally cool. But yeah, like your concentration goes completely out of whack. I guess you'll be standing there talking to someone, but your body is going through the absolute ringer because it's trying to like figure out, okay, what battle am I fighting right now, and how do I expel all this excess? And I think that's what it can be so easily. Maybe this is part of why I didn't like the term diabulimia, because I was like, you're making kind of a punny word on a disease that is already kind of taken not massively seriously because we don't have an inhaler, or we do have obviously insulin and stuff, but like a lot of people's understanding of diabetes is you can have a Twix and that's your pill. I'm like, yeah, but you don't understand why I'm having the Twix. I'm having the Twix because I can't feel my legs.
I think people also, when they think about diabetes, they think of type 2. They often people just like assume it's because of like your lifestyle choices and things like that, not type 1.
Totally. And that, yeah, I mean, this is so funny. Even though I'm, an advocate for this, I keep forgetting things that are so obvious like that. Like, yeah, you say, oh, I have diabetes. Yeah, the vast majority of folks, it is type 2. So therefore, they then make an assumption about you. Oh, therefore, you have type 2 diabetes. Therefore, and I'm like, so then, and then whether or not this was correct of me to do so, I then wanted to disavow people's opinion that I was overweight, or that I was indulgent, or that I was excessive, or it was my fault, it was my lifestyle. And I kind of want to be like, no, it's not my fault, it's the diabetes, and I was born with this, so therefore I hate it. Like it's not my fault, it's its fault. And trying to distance myself from it. And I kind of thought, yeah, well, if I'm skeletal, then no one can think it's type 2. Which then I think is also then kind of again giving a bit too much power to the opinions of others when it was my internal sadness that was the driving force behind the disorder. Oh,
But
it's a
I think that in itself is such a, I'm speaking from my perspective here, but like for me, the smaller I made myself, the more people would recognize that something inside was going on because I couldn't sort of vocalize it. And when you were saying earlier, and I hope this doesn't come across in the wrong way, this is, I would say, like the worst part about an eating disorder is how much it kind of distorts your thoughts about you. But when I was like at the depth of struggling, you know, it was very much I wanted to make myself as ill as possible, and I don't know why. Like it's not, you know, people say like, oh, you wanted to sabotage yourself, or you wanted people to see you as ill. Like for me, it wasn't that. It was I just wanted to reach that point. And almost when you were talking then about you know, being hospitalized and your blood turning to acid and stuff like that. And I think for somebody that's deep in an eating disorder, that would be a goal. Like, you know, lot of people, it's, you know, it's a slow decline. And when people say, like, you know, I remember my mum saying, like, you're going to be put in hospital and you could die from this. And I was like, yeah, okay, cool. That's kind of what I'm hoping for.
Totally.
So it's a really, like, it's a very difficult concept, because people can sit here and tell you, like, oh, these are the consequences of an eating disorder. And it's like, yeah, no. Like, I know what they are, and that's almost what I'm aiming for. And I wonder how you flipped, I mean, I'm assuming that you flipped that as to kind of, I don't want that hospitalization anymore.
Yeah, I think, again, you're good at this, you are.
Do you think I've got better in the 2 years?
I think so, yeah. I think it's from all that Strictly that your mum watches. you're so right. Like, as I say, I was desperate for recognition and legitimization of what I was going through. These checkpoints I was desperate to hit, because then I was like, well, maybe now I'll be successful at this, and, you know, then I'll be recognised as being successful at that. And I think in terms of the flip, as it were, getting out of that mindset, I don't know. I mean, what is the thing? I think the entirety of my time in mental health care, be it outpatient, inpatient, what have you, the diabetes was secondary. And even though it's viewed as, oh, this is an important thing on Lawrence's checklist, in a way that I am not judging anyone for this, that the services were not there for them to be adequately prepared to deal with it. The irony that, or not the irony, but it was my diabetic care team that went, I think you've got an eating disorder, mate. Because I think they work within a remit of people with diabetes. So when they see someone with diabetes starting to really go outside the lines of what's expected, they went, oh, something else is happening here. Oh, I think it might be an eating disorder. Right, let's then, and then through the diabetic care team, that then got the ball rolling in terms of psychiatric help. Whereas in a mental health facility, they're dealing with so many things. And then they're like, oh God, now I need to read a textbook about diabetes too? Oh, fuck. Like, they were prepared to deal with eating disorders, depression, self-harm, XYZ. But the diabetes just seemed like this whole other thing. And I guess it doesn't need to be diabetes. It could be a chronic illness. That has a debilitating factor on some folks. But for something that is so intrinsically linked to food, it was very, very important that it got nipped in the bud. And it didn't. So that, therefore, the bud bloomed.
Lawrence's face then was... Really,
I heard what I said, and I was like, ugh, I didn't like that one. Scratch
that one.
I think what was then not good was that I was obviously in dire straits, to the point that I was needing medical intervention, mental health side of things. I desperately needed help, and yet I could see in the eyes of those who were helping me, they did not know what I was talking about. And I'm like, oh no, I need you guys to be better than me. Because otherwise I'm leading the session, and I'm a mental patient. I can't be held responsible for this. So I learned to then not talk about my diabetes, which is intrinsically linked to what was wrong with me.
Yeah.
And I was like, ugh, it's just easier if I just say anorexia, because they know how to deal with that. So I think I stunted my development into being quote unquote recovered, because I don't think the means were there for me to get better within that system. So I've attributed, yes, intervention, therapeutic and otherwise intervention, but also time. Like, and I know that's such a hard thing to say at points when you feel you don't have it, you don't have the time, or you don't, you know, have the luxury of that, or of waiting things out. And especially when things feel particularly bad and sad, it's hard to imagine a life past the disorder. I couldn't imagine doing what I'm doing right now, chatting with you so openly about this stuff during the height of it. But it just took, yeah, just a wee bit of life and time, and maybe figuring out who I was, because I think it, both the eating disorder and the diabetes, I think stole a lot of my childhood and a lot of my development years. So I didn't really know who I was, who Lawrence was. And I think then moving through the world as me, an individual with the diabetes, obviously with the disordered eating there, but them not being the leading characters, they were more the supporting cast in my life, you know. That meant that I got to kind of come to the surface, and it meant that I got to kind of go, oh, I value this, I don't really need that, so I'm going to jettison that. I kind of like a bit more of that, you know. And I then got to choose what's important to me, as opposed to the disorder and the diabetes dictating that. How's that for a pool quote? Yeah, so that's the main things, really. But yeah, I think having folks who will be a bit switched on, and it's not in my nature to be ballsy, so I couldn't, you know, tell a medical practitioner you should know better, whatever. But I think maybe it comes from the patient, to be a patient's advocate, to kind of talk openly about this stuff, like, okay, maybe you don't know who to send me to, but or you don't know how to help me, but maybe you know who could help me. I think, yeah, I was trying to like please other people so much that I was just kind of I was hurting myself. So I think being honest with myself of this is what the situation is, and by legitimizing my process, then that legitimizes my pain and my struggles, and they were legitimate. Maybe just because the system doesn't think they are, or as legitimate as others, you the individual know how important something is to you, the individual. So hopefully with work, and last year I went down and spoke at Parliament, can you believe? What?
Bloody hell.
I know, it was a very warm day and I was very sweaty. But it was a parliamentary inquiry into this subject, into Tide, which is mad. So hopefully, yeah, that will be by the time that this comes out. Maybe that might have hopefully been published. I don't know in what form it's going to take, but I think just the more people who are talking about it, the more it legitimizes it for the people who are going through it. Because it's, as I say, it's very isolating. So to know that there are other folks out there who are going through it or have gone through it is hugely powerful. I really do believe that. And it was at this parliamentary inquiry where someone mentioned a hypo, and I've done lots of peer support group and lived experience panels and stuff. Even in those, I just don't really talk about the diabetes, because it's like, well, then I have to explain to all these people what XYZ. At this parliamentary inquiry, someone mentioned hypos, and I was instinctively going to be like, hypo is like, that's like when your blood sugar's whatever. And I was like, oh, I do not need to do that in this room. Huh. And like, I was like, it just kind of hit me, like, these are the people I've been looking for. Mm-hmm. People like me. We don't have a WhatsApp group or anything. Like, we're not chatting, and I don't know where they are now, and or like maybe have some of them on Instagram and stuff. But just, there's a little community out there, and it's just finding that support where you can find it, and obviously positive, good, healthy support. That is so important. But just recognition, I think it's recognition and legitimization of what you're going through.
I think that sounds fantastic, and it's lovely as well that you are able to speak about your experience, because I can imagine that there will be lots of people out there that will be like, I've got diabetes, I struggle with my eating, I'm really not sure what's going on, and I feel like I, you know, I'm failing in all of these areas. And then they'll hear you say, this is what I'm going through, and they will then feel connected to somebody. So that's incredible that you can do that. But I also think that what you said there about positive support is so important, and it feels important for me to connect with people that understand you. Like, it doesn't have to necessarily be the same eating disorder. I think you know, I was gonna ask you about, like, you know, do you see TIDE as something that being something that you can recover from, because obviously diabetes is a lifelong condition. But when you were speaking then, I was like, personally for me, and it may be different for everybody, I think that recovery is possible in terms of you can live a life where day to day you're not encapsulated by your eating disorder and it's not limiting you and things like that. But I'm really glad that I've been able to connect with people and find a community, so that when I do have a little stumble, I can chat to them and talk it through and reach out to people that understand, rather than falling down the trap of the eating disorder. And I think that's the same with the kind of support that you've now got. Is, yes, it may be that, you know, one day you're doing your insulin and you think, oh god, should I go back down that route, or something triggers you, like watching that film the other day. You've now got people that you can talk to about that, rather than it just being held inside and then it becoming such a bigger thing than what it would do now, because you can talk about it, talk about how it's impacted you, do things that help you to kind of get rid of those feelings and move on with your life, and, you know, be happy and be healthy. And I think ultimately that's what we're all hoping for in recovery, is to hit those roadblocks but be able to bounce back and carry on without falling into a relapse.
Totally. I think that's I co-sign that 100%. I think during illness I was desperate to find other people who had an eating disorder, because it felt like we had this, like, dirty little secret together, and you know, and conspiratorial almost. And that's, you know, a discussion for another time. But I think it's this idea of a healthy community. And I think, just to know that, because I'm aware that, you know, it takes guts to do what we're doing right now, to be talking so openly and frankly about these things. But it's kind of normalized for me. I don't know about for you, because I'm kind of like, well, it is my life. So, yeah, and, you know, I've kind of got a big mouth anyway. So, like, I might as well be chatting about
things. And I love a chat, so.
Yeah, totally, 100%. is this thing on?
You actually corrected me then. I was like, oh, my God, did I press record?
Oh, my God, I'll just say it all over again. I wouldn't want anyone who's kind of, who might be listening to this to be like, oh, God, I can't even talk about it. Like, I can't, you know, and it's like, it has taken, we're two individuals. These might just be our personalities. It might not be the person listening. But also, we've been doing this for a wee while. I'm older than my years. And as I say, I've had time with this. I'm not in the throes of it. I'm not in its grasp right now. And I'm very fortunate for that. And I can't believe that's the case, because at times I didn't think that would be possible. So I'm celebrating these achievements and stuff. So I wouldn't want anyone sitting at home to feel like, you know, bad that they can't talk as openly as us. It might come one day. Hopefully it will come through. Oh God, I'm talking about ourselves and I've forgotten what the point was again.
But I also think if that day doesn't come, that's also okay. I think if that day, you know, I think if you recover and you keep your eating disorder confined to the therapy room, I think it's a really amazing thing to be able to speak openly about, because I think it takes the shame away from yourself. And that for me has been really important in my recovery, of that actually it's not shameful that I've had an eating disorder. It's something that I've had, and that's not my fault. But what is in my control is now what I do about it. And, you know, do I just sit here and feel sorry for myself, or do I go out and recover and allow myself to live my life? Like, that I feel is a choice that I have.
Absolutely.
But I think, you know, I know so many people that have gone into eating disorder advocacy post recovery and they're thriving, but I also know so many people that have thought, you know what, it's taken enough of my time and I don't want to talk about it anymore, and I'm totally happy girl. To run free.
100%. I mean, I'm still trying to figure, like, I still have issues around food, or like about my relationship to food. I still have issues with my diabetes, or my relationship to my diabetes. I'm still figuring stuff out as a human in this world. Like, just because we're sitting here chatting on a podcast does not mean that we're totally hunky-dory.
Oh, hell.
No, like, there's still things to do. And yeah, I think, yeah, I need to recognize and check in with myself every so often. Like, okay, am I kind of giving a bit too of myself to this cause or whatever? But I just kind of feel right now, when I'm in the position I am currently in and with the energy that I currently have, I want to use it for awareness raising. But if in a couple of years, like, I want to go live on a mountain with goats and not talk to anyone and get off my phone, so be it. Yeah. I think it's just kind of the quiet power of just even existing. Like, that's kind of a bit of an F to the disorder, you know. Yeah. Kind of like, I bet you didn't think I'd be still here. Well, joke's on you. Yeah. Now I listen to podcasts.
I always think it's so good, you know, that we've had this crappy experience that's completely been shit, and we're now making a good thing out of it. That's how I see this podcast is. Mm-hmm. I've, you know, had this shit. I've had a crappy relapse this year, but it's actually made me even more resilient. I've learned even more about myself. And like you said, you know, I took some time out from doing the podcast because I was like, I'm not going to sit and chat about this. This is like completely taking up my day-to-day life anyway. But now I'm back and I'm really enjoying it and want to carry on. But I do know that if I don't want to carry on, it's also totally okay. And I think, like what you were saying there, like just existing, I think it's just saying to yourself, whatever you do is enough, whether that's you want to campaign or you want to just, you know, go live your life, like whatever you're doing there, it's a big middle finger up to the eating disorder. And I think that's what you need ultimately.
Yeah. And I think to come back to what I think was your question 29 hours ago, about recovery from this as well, like, yes, your diabetes is not going anywhere, and that is really hard, but it doesn't need to be, as I say, the defining characteristic in your life, but it can be part of your life. It's not your entire identity. And yes, I have the relationship I have to food and to things, but I think it's just, whereas before, you know, the relationship was at a 10, it's now down to like a 4 or 5 or something. And so I think it's just adjusting your maybe internal logic and your internal relationship to things. And I think, yes, I don't want to be glib and say recovery is possible, but it is.
Yeah.
In what form that takes, I do not know. I can only speak to my own. Yeah, I don't know. It's yeah, it's yeah, I don't know. Kind of lost for words. It's weird and hard because it's always there. Like, your diabetes is always there, but it's just, yeah, it's whether it's being your good pal or it's good cop bad cop, I guess, on particular days, and it's how you engage with it. And yeah, it, as you say, like, resilience comes into play, and kind of a fortitude in this, and nope, that's it. Resilience and fortitude, those are the only words that I can think of.
Yeah, no, I think they're really good words. Resilience in particular in recovery from eating disorder, I think, like, you know, that speaks a lot. I'm gonna close us there because it's been an hour, which is mad. I know.
That is ridiculous. What?
And I want to go get some dinner. Thank you so much. Like, it's such a pleasure. I genuinely could speak to you for hours and
hours.
How
mad is that? That's great.
Yeah, I absolutely want to make a trip up to Scotland. We can do nice things together, but it's been so lovely to speak to you again, and it's just so nice. I'm gonna do more of these, I think, with people of like a couple of years on, seeing how people are doing, because it's so nice to, you know, hear how how much it means to you that things have moved on so much, and the work that you're still doing, and even if you weren't doing, still doing the work, like, you know, just to know that you're doing okay, and that's enough. I haven't,
to be fully honest, I haven't listened back to my episode since we did it, because I'm like, because I'm now a couple of years on deeper into my thinking on it. Mm-hmm. So maybe like a couple of years back, maybe we just kind of skimmed the surface on things, where I'm now like, okay, no, now I, now this is what I'm thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And so maybe I have repeated stories. Sorry to your mum if she's listening to this episode as well, being like, he's nice.
Two years ago, she's not going to remember.
A bit repetitive. Oh no, I think she will. I'm very memorable. But but you know, I guess if stories are still coming to me 2 years on, that shows that they're important. But yeah, I think it's great to just keep checking in and stuff. We could just do the Fringe. Let's just do like a live show.
Yeah.
There we go.
That sounds awesome. I'd love to do that.
Cool. Right. Well, someone pay for it and then we'll do it.
Oh, I thought you meant go. But you mean no. For us to do a podcast there. Oh yeah, let's do that. That'd be there awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I will let you go and have a nice evening. But thank you so much. It's been
not at all.
So wonderful to chat to you again, and do keep in touch.
Will do.
With everything, not just eating sort of stuff. Keep me updated with wedding plans.
Yes, 1989 Taylor's version.
All right, I will speak to you very soon.
See you later, sunshine.
Thank you.
Thank you, darling. Bye.
If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode, so be sure to subscribe. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, but with the right support, they can be recovered from. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.